You're with SBS Radio. Find more great stories in your language at sbs.com.au.
One in three of our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander bubs experience ear and hearing troubles that can make it hard for them to listen, learn and talk to others. Hearing Australia's HAPPY program offers free, safe and simple hearing checks for kids under six or not yet attending full-time school. Give your kids happy ears today. Call Hearing Australia on 134 432 or visit hearing.com.au today.
When you hear about violence against Indigenous women, did you know that a lot of this violence is also at the hands of the state itself? And did you know that most of the violence against Indigenous women is neither reported in the media nor debated by lawmakers? Our guests will shed some light on this phenomenon. They're both academics who've spent years researching violence against Indigenous women, battling it through the courts, and raising awareness in society, including in the political realm and international organizations. I am Bertrand Tungandami, and this is the NITV podcast.
Australia is not meeting its human rights obligations, and the last review of Australia by the Committee on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women supported the need for a separate national action plan for Indigenous women, as did the Committee on Race Discrimination, as did the Committee on the Rights of the Child, as did the Special Rapporteur on Violence to Women and the Special Rapporteur on Indigenous Peoples. And all that advice, that, you know, incredibly strong advice from five UN mechanisms, was completely ignored by the Australian government.
That was Noongar woman Dr. Hannah McGlade. We'll hear more from her later in the podcast. Let's first hear from Curtin University's distinguished Professor Suvendrini Pereira. Professor Pereira has authored or co-authored numerous studies documenting racialized violence against Indigenous women, against women in Australia and overseas. Academics have observed a pattern and even designed a theoretical framework to describe the phenomenon.
The pattern begins with the types of violence that colonization inflicted on Indigenous communities, but in particular on Indigenous women and girls and trans people. This form of violence took very specific forms: sexual violence, removal from families, trafficking across borders. These kinds of violence, we want to say, have continued in different ways and have compounded in the present. They continue to visit on the bodies of Indigenous women. So just to give you one example, one of the things that's emerged about women who go missing and are found murdered is that very often when their families report their deaths to, or that they're missing to the police, they hear, they must have gone walkabout. You know, they must have just taken off. Because of this kind of institutional ingrained notion that Indigenous people go walkabout, very often those deaths are not investigated in time and people are not saved in time. So that's a very good example of how colonial patterns of thinking play out in the present.
So the forms of state violence go way back in Australia's history, and most recently, even when they're investigated, Aboriginal women are not afforded the right level of respect and consideration.
One of the case studies that we spend a lot of time on is the case of Andrea Kickett, who was a woman who tried very hard to protect herself from her violent partner. And she repeatedly went to the police. She repeatedly went to agencies that were supposed to protect her and her children. And she just was not afforded the respect to believe in what she was saying, you know, what she was saying. She was told, for example, that she couldn't go into protection with her four youngest children, that she had too many kids. So, you know, there's a whole series of ways in which Indigenous women get discriminated against and disbelieved and disrespected by the legal system.
In late 2021, cases are still going through the court system across the country. And one particular case is closely followed by Dr. Hannah McGlead, where the system looks to be failing an Aboriginal woman.
Aboriginal women are still being murdered. They're still being prosecuted for murder when they fight back to defend their lives. They're still having their children taken from them. They're still being violently assaulted by police. They're still dying. There's an inquest this week into the death of young Shadina Wynn in the Perth Coroner's Court. And, you know, these cases highlight the lack of investment by governments into prevention and proper supports for Aboriginal women who face this incredibly, shockingly high level of interpersonal violence, but also systemic and structural violence and discrimination and abuse, leading to increased vulnerability in so many aspects of life, including admissions to hospital psychiatric wards. There's just an absolute disdain for Aboriginal women's lives, and that is why we called it Indigenous femicide. It is what it is. This is not, you know, an accident that Indigenous women are dying at such high rates, are being hospitalised, are having diseases at you know, a rate that is unparalleled in Australia. The burden of violence is so severe, and yet Australian governments and ministers invested with responsibility for violence against women are behaving in such an appalling and shallow manner to Aboriginal women.
Academics, politicians and activists, most of them Indigenous, have been striving to raise awareness about the situation, highlighting ongoing cases and petitioning parliaments on state and federal levels.
In West Australia, there's been a petition lodged in the Legislative Council, the upper house of our state parliament, calling for an inquiry, a state inquiry into murdered and missing Indigenous women and girls, and for asking for justice in relation to the murder of Stacey Thorne, who was 22 weeks pregnant when she was murdered in Boddington some years ago. The person originally convicted for her murder, a white man named Scott Ostick, was released by a Supreme Court jury late last year. That jury didn't include any Indigenous people. And her family believe justice has not been done. And we're also calling for the release of the Crime Corruption Commission report into the police investigation of Stacey Thorne's murder. So we have a petition with more than 2,000 signatories lodged in our state parliament. Rosie Sahana, the first upper legislative council Aboriginal woman member in WA, tabled that petition on our behalf, and have subsequently provided a report in support of it, or a submission. So we're waiting to hear what will happen. Will the WA government go ahead with an inquiry, or will it refuse and ignore the plight of Indigenous women? At the federal level, I think Senator Bernie is still interested. And I have had some input into a draft of a potential terms of reference for an inquiry. But, you know, at the same time, I think it is true to say that Indigenous women's lives seem not to matter much in this country, and that the movement across Australia has seen rising awareness of sexism and violence to women, but because racism is so prevalent that the concern is not properly being extended to Indigenous women.
Recently, the Prime Minister convened a Women's Safety Summit looking at tackling all issues affecting women. Experts say the inclusion of Aboriginal women in the discussions at the Women's Safety Summit looks like an afterthought.
Well, we're simply not seeing the traction that we should have. And I work with the family of Stacey Thorne, murder victim, to get that petition up. It seems to be just left to the victims' families and the advocates, really, to fight for Aboriginal women's safety in Australia. There has been a National Safety Summit recently, and Aboriginal women were not properly invited. I certainly wasn't invited, neither was the National Family Violence Prevention Legal Service forum body, which represents Aboriginal women's services across the country. So we have a government that is trying to silence the strong voices of Aboriginal women who are fighting for women's safety and equality and human rights. It's a very regressed conservative government that really doesn't have the commitment to our women's lives. Indigenous women who were invited said it felt like they were an afterthought, that Indigenous women are just an afterthought. And that's absolutely so. This government is, you know, keen to look good on the issue, and they certainly took up a suggestion that I made that we need a council on violence against Aboriginal women to be highlighting these issues and responding at the most senior level of government. And they announced that through the media, and I wasn't invited on that one either, even though I actually made that suggestion to them. So they want to be seen to be responding, but they have these tokenistic efforts and gestures. They're excluding Aboriginal women leadership in this area. There are three Aboriginal women in Australia who have actually written PhDs on violence against women, Aboriginal women. We're all people with lived experience. So we experienced rape, you know, and we have spent our lives working for women, and we're not a part of the dialogue. So that's really, really kind of racist, actually. And we're not going to get anywhere while our expertise and knowledge is being, you know, undermined in this way. It is a real problem, and we must have a specific standalone national action plan on violence to Indigenous women.
Ultimately, neither the media nor politicians report adequately on violence against Indigenous women, and a lot needs to be done to address the issue.
I think this is really critical, first of all, to make this issue visible, because there is an invisibility about it. We have found when we talk about, you know, the Indigenous femicide case study, there's a real lack of awareness of the extent to which this has been an issue in Australia. I think it's also part of the bigger project of truth-telling that Indigenous leaders have called for, that there needs to be a form of truth-telling and a form of understanding of what has happened, and that we don't just see the reporting on this issue as a reporting of individual stories separate, but to see it as a systemic issue.
That's it for this episode of the NITV podcast. Thank you to our guests, Professor Suvendrini Pereira and Dr. Hannah McGlade. And if you want to listen to more of our podcasts, the NITV podcast and the Our Story podcast, just go to where you get your podcasts from.
One in three of our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander bubs experience ear and hearing troubles that can make it hard for them to listen, learn, and talk to others. Hearing Australia's HAPPY program offers free, safe, and simple hearing checks for kids under 6 or not yet attending full-time school. Give your kids happy ears today. Call Hearing Australia on 134 432 or visit hearing.com.au today.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.